just to let you know, I learn in the... Sorry, someone's humming in the front row and throwing me off. Just so you know that I learn, in the past, I've promised to use these offerings wisely and well, and I was reminded that promises can be dangerous things. So let me change that. We aspire to use these offerings wisely and well. And also, for those of you following along, and I know some of you do, I am aware that I'm skipping the meditation. So in the Hebrew Bible, what many call the Old Testament, there's a story of twin brothers, Jacob and Esau. And theirs is a very fraught relationship. Things start off hard for these two from the very beginning. There's rumors that as Jacob is trying to emerge from the womb, Esau is behind him holding onto his ankle tightly, fighting to be the firstborn. So it's not surprising that life continues this way for the twins. Rumors have it that their father Isaac favors Jacob, while their mother Rebekah has a soft spot for Esau. And for the times in which they lived, birthright, being the firstborn, it came with responsibility and with right. And Jacob, technically the firstborn, handled that role beautifully. But Esau struggled. Esau struggled to find a more substantial role within his family, to be seen as at least equal, if not maybe the most important. But like so many others do when they're fighting for attention, he did this in a way in which we might call negative attention seeking. At every turn, he undermined his twin brother. And in doing so, he put his family and their land at great risk. And he understood this, so eventually he fled. He fled far away to the land of Canaan, and he married, and he began his own life separately. So 20 years passed without a word between the brothers. But eventually, with aging parents and questions of distribution of family land, Esau recognized that he needed to return home, and as best as he could, he needed to reconcile with Jacob. And we know that none of this was simple. The brothers had a lifetime of distrust, of fighting, of competing with each other. And of course, that played out here. Jacob sent spies to check on his brother, and Esau continued to find ways to undermine Jacob. And so fast forward, lots of unpleasantness, and there's the actual visit between the brothers after 20 years. And in the moment, when Esau finally sees Jacob, when he finally sees his brother, not some idea in his head, not some frustration in his heart, he falls to his knees and he embraces his brother. Now, this isn't the end of the story because nothing repairs that quickly and that easily. But it's that moment of grace, that opening, that possibility I want us to recognize. The knowledge that what seems immovable, that what seems impossible can actually shift. Whether it's the story of Persephone, as we heard a little while ago, or Jacob and Esau, or one of 100 of scriptural stories across many faith traditions, religious teachings come back to one central theme. This is the core that I want you to hear. We are not passive recipients of our life circumstances, but instead we are co-creators of these lives of ours. Because notice here, even though there's an act of God actually playing things out here, some theoretical, all-powerful being that many of us do not believe in, no intervention is happening. This is a human problem, and that's where the solutions to have to be found. And I speak about this because in a mere week, Jews around the world will begin to focus here as they embark on the journey of self-reflection that allowed Esau, as with so many others, to see an existing relationship in a brand new light. As the high holy days begin, starting with Rosh Hashanah and ending 10 days later with Yom Kippur, Jews are invited into reflection and reconciliation. first with themselves, then with their community, and finally with God. This is the work and the focus, as well as the gift of these days of awe, as they are known. Not awe at some exterior being, awe at the separations and the breakages that occur, and awe at the grace that permits, at times, healing and reconnection. And though I've said it here before, I will say it again and again, whether it's the Jewish High Holy Days, or the period in the Christian tradition between Palm Sunday and Easter, or the period of reflection offered by Mabon in the Wiccan tradition, every faith tradition makes space for this sort of self-reflection that can, that might, lead to a self-determined change in relationship. Except Unitarian Universalism. As a tradition of exploration, we don't have a built-in ritual for this sort of reflection, for the essential question of what must I do to be at peace with myself, with others, and with my community. And I'm using the Jewish High Holy Days as an example because that's what I know best. But it's really one option of many. And what's fascinating to me about the High Holy Days is that nothing is asking for forgiveness on high. It's at this level and this level. It's not until we've made peace in our own lives that we then turn to God and say, may I be written in the book of life for another year. But I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. The Jewish High Holy Days begin with the blowing of the shofar, the ram's horn, shouting to the world. It's the beginning of the Jewish New Year, which is different from the Gregorian calendar we run by. As Rosh Hashanah begins, Jews gather in temple, beginning this reflective work, and ending with apples dipped in honey, symbolizing hopes for a sweet new year. The first night begins with the recitation of teshuva, repentance, words spoken by the entirety of the community, and space for one's personal repentance as well. And well to you use that might sound punishing, in reality, it's incredibly freeing. Because it says that slight against your brother Jacob, the rejection of your twin Esau, or whatever your circumstances are, here is a place to grieve it, to let it go within community. Here is a place to acknowledge together that we act in ways that we wish we hadn't. And this ritual, it allows one's truth to emerge, to be held gently, and to be seen. And then intentional space to seek out whatever reconciliation is needed. All of which makes me wonder, how does Unitarian Universalism benefit from these traditions? Because some of us are bi-religious. We're Unitarian and Jewish, or UU and Christian, or UU and Buddhist, or Wiccan, or much more. Any of all of which means there's ritual and support in other parts of our lives, but we need it here too. We need it here too. And short of creating a new holiday that's Unitarian Universalist specific, and create one called Chalukah, and let's just say we need never do that again. Absent that, the question isn't one of a holiday specific to this faith, but a question of what we learn from other traditions. On Rosh Hashanah, after reflection has been tended to, the period of seeking forgiveness begins. A song, a chant, really, known as Avinu Malkeinu, begins.
Avinu Malkeinu, Avinu Malkeinu, Avinu Malkeinu, Konenu ve'anehinu, avinu malkeinu, ki'ein banu mahasim, asei imanu, tzedaka v'chesed.
Roughly, this is asking God for forgiveness. But more modern texts remind us to ask our parents, our ancestors, our predecessors to be kind to us, to answer us, because we don't always get things right, to treat us with justice and love.
Avinu Malkeinu, Avinu Malkeinu, Avinu Malkeinu, Kienu Moshienu, Avinu Malkeinu, Kien Banu Mahasim, Asei Imanu, Tzedaka V'chesed.
It could be anyone really that we're speaking to, a teacher, a friend, a colleague saying, I'm sorry I did that. I'm not perfect. I make mistakes. Please be nice and gentle and fair and don't punish me too much. And help me remember not to make this mistake again.
Avinu Malkeinu, Avinu Malkeinu, Avinu Malkeinu, Chonenu v'aneinu, Avinu Malkeinu, Kien banu mahasim, Asei imanu, Tzedaka v'chesed.
Again and again and again we chant, letting the beauty of the song open us up so that we might account for our actions. Where have we wronged someone? Could we have been kinder, more honest, more just?
Avinu Malkeinu, Avinu Malkeinu, Avinu Malkeinu, Chonenu ve'aneinu, Avinu Malkeinu, Kien Banu Mahasim, Asei Imanu, Tzedaka V'chesed.
The song goes on, making space until each and all are clear in the very core of their hearts. This isn't a have I been wronged question, but instead one of supplication, asking ourselves in community how we wish to live differently.
Avinu Malkeinu, Avinu Malkeinu, Avinu Malkeinu, Chonenu v'aneinu, Avinu Malkeinu, Kien Banu Mahasim, Asei Imanu, Tzedaka v'chesed. Avinu Malkeinu, Avinu Malkeinu, Avinu Malkeinu, Chonenu ve'aneinu, Avinu Malkeinu, Kien Banu Mahasim, Asei Imanu, V'hoshinu.
Before long, hearts are open, minds are clear, and spirits are willing. As we leave services, sharing honey-dipped apples and wishing each other a sweet new year, there is a bodily assurance that we are taking a part in making it so. This is what we need too in this faith. A chance to be present in community, aware but unashamed of our imperfections, committed only to returning whenever we stray to the values that guide our day. So I close with these words, the admonition of our chalice lighting. Unconditional love is not so much about how we receive and endure each other. It is about the deep vow, never under any condition, to stop bringing the flawed truth of who we are to each other.